We're going to stay with the story of tomorrow's election and turn to the issue of voting rights. As Americans head to the polls, many of these voters may be exercising a right that was denied them in previous elections. A new study by the Sentencing Project shows that some 800,000 people with felony convictions have been given the right to vote over the past decade, thanks to reforms to laws governing eligibility in 23 states. But at least 5.3 million felons of voting age remain disenfranchised. That number includes nearly 4 million who live in 35 states, which continue to deny people on probation, parole, or have completed their sentence their voting rights. And African Americans and Latinos are disproportionately represented in that group. For example, at least 1 in 8 black adult males is not allowed to vote. So we wanted to talk more about why this matters. So we've called the executive director of the Sentencing Project, Mark Maurer, and we've also called Susan Burton. She runs an organization that helps formerly incarcerated women in South Central Los Angeles, and she was recently nominated as a CNN hero, and she's with us from NPR Studios in Culver City. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Michelle.
Marco, let's start with you, because I would like to ask, there are people who will have heard this introduction and they will say, why do I care about this? I mean, if you do the crime, do the time, and that's one of the unpleasant consequences that comes with having broken the law, that you may lose your right to participate. Why should I care?
Well, I think we need to care. First of all, it's a question of democracy, and does every citizen have a right to participate in government? You know, we don't normally establish character tests for voting. You can have a good character or bad character, but, you know, that's what democracy is all about. We want all their voices in. Secondly, I think when people have committed a felony, they're now living in the community, it's in everyone's interest for public safety reasons to get those people integrated into constructive activities and organizations in the community. And if the message that goes out is you're a second class citizen, that's not very constructive. If the message instead is your voice counts also, that's giving people a sense of responsibility and obligation.
Has our attitude about this as a society changed over time? I mean, was there a point at which there was more eagerness to restore voting rights to people who were formerly incarcerated, and did that change, or has there always been kind of a lack of interest or distaste?
Well, the laws
in
many ways go back to the time of the founding of the country, and it's a great experiment in democracy, but obviously very limited. So women couldn't vote, African Americans, illiterates, poor people, but also people with felony convictions. And we've done away with all those other exclusions except for this one. It's only relatively recently we've seen this surge of activity, in large part, I think, because the scale of disenfranchisement is so much greater now because of the explosion of the criminal justice system over the last several decades.
Susan, let's bring you in. How did you get interested in the issue of helping women who've formerly been incarcerated, and particularly focusing on this issue of restoring the voting rights of these women?
When I came out of prison, or when I was in prison, I was told by prison guards that I would never, ever be able to vote again. And then I came across a group that had different information. When I researched it, I found out that I could vote, and I began to vote. It's a part of our democracy, my right to vote, and I started talking with other women and to find out what they thought about voting, if they were voting. And I found out there was a lot of misinformation, and I began a program to educate people about their right to vote. We have a 6-month leadership development at A New Way of Life that teaches women about their rights, about the broader frame, and about how to do a voter campaign, how to do a registration, how to mobilize people to vote, and how to re-educate people about their voting rights. On probation, off parole, you can vote in California. Your right is automatically reinstated after you discharge parole.
Okay, but that varies in different states. I just wanted to ask you, Susan, if forgive me if I don't mean for this to be a stupid or disrespectful question, but I would like to ask, why is it so important to you? Why was it so important to you, and what argument do you make to the other women with whom you work about why it should be important to them?
It's our political power. Our voice matters. Our vote counts. It's a part of what democracy in America. And so I exercise that right and encourage others to exercise their right to vote. When I was sent to prison, there was a sentence for a period of time, not forever.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the voting rights of formerly incarcerated citizens and the states in which those rights are sometimes restored and the movement to restore voting rights and how that all happens. You just heard Susan Burton. She's director of A New Way of Life. That's a nonprofit that works with formerly incarcerated women in South Central Los Angeles. Also with us here with me in Washington is Mark Maurer, executive director of the Sentencing Project. Now, Mark, what are some of the arguments that have been advanced about restoring voting rights, particularly in states that have had different policies on this? And as we mentioned, you've seen progress in 23 states in the past 13 years. Laws were repealed, new ones have passed, and policies revised that either make it easier or make it clearer how this is supposed to happen. What are the arguments?
Well, part of it is, you know, this is a question of democracy. It's a question of political impact as well. You know, we look at a state like Florida, the historic election of 2000, we decided a national presidential campaign based on some 537 votes. On the day of the election in Florida, then, there were some 600,000 people who had completed their felony sentence yet were not permitted to vote under the laws at the time. Now, how many of them would have voted if they were able to? Who would they have voted for? We can only guess about that, but we may be deciding national, state, and local elections on this.
Now, let me ask you a question. Given we've discussed very often on this program and certainly a lot of other venues that African Americans and Latinos are disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. So they're disproportionately represented in the affected population. And these groups also have a predisposition to vote for Democrats for all the reasons we could debate. Why should Republicans care about this then?
Well, I would hope they would care for the same reasons that 100 years ago we had a debate about whether women should have the right to vote. And, you know, it seems to me either women should have had the right to vote or should not. We should talk about that. Who they would vote for, how they would vote on particular issues has to be irrelevant in democracy. Same thing here, too. When I go into prison and talk to people and we talk about issues of the war in Iraq or taxes or abortion, the range of opinions I hear is not very unlike what you hear on the outside. So I think on the one hand, there's a lot of similarity to what people are talking about. And at the same time, it really shouldn't matter. Either people have the right to vote or they shouldn't. That's the question to address.
And Susan, when you talk to the woman with whom you work about voting, I'm curious, first of all, if many of these women had a history of voting before they were incarcerated, like did you? And what arguments do you make to them about why it matters that they get back out there and try to participate?
Well, it matters that we participate in all constructive areas of life. And Michelle, I want to tell you about an experience we had at A New Way of Life. We were doing a voter education registration training and asked the voter register's office to send someone out to us to conduct this training. Well, that person got to us and had so much misinformation. So it's important that people are educated. It's important that the voter register's office gets it right also. And it's important that we hold them accountable to the information that they're putting out. So
you're saying a lot of people assume that formerly incarcerated people can't vote when in fact that they can.
Exactly.
Have you ever been humiliated or embarrassed when you tried to vote and someone didn't know? Or has that ever happened to you or anybody you've worked with?
No, I'm past humiliation. I'm standing for my rights now. But no, I haven't been humiliated. I have been angered around the poll not having my name on the list after I know that I'm registered. So I have to do one of these provisional ballots.
You aren't the only one. Trust me on that one.
So
Mark Maurer, final question for you. You know that this there's been a renewed emphasis on the part of some about alleged voter fraud. There are groups that are now alleging that they feel that a lot of people are being improperly allowed to vote, and that is tilting elections in another way. And I'd like to ask, you know, how you see that. Do you think that those are legitimate concerns, or do you feel that that is, in fact, aimed at this particular group of people?
Well, I don't have any problem with, you know, election law officials enforcing the law appropriate and all that. The problem with the felony disenfranchisement laws, it causes such enormous amounts of confusion, both among people with prior felony convictions as well as the election officials themselves. And so we've seen problems on both sides where people who are ineligible to vote according to laws are sometimes permitted to do it. Also, people who should be able to vote are incorrectly told that they can't vote. And that's the whole problem. You know, it should be if you're not incarcerated, if you're living in the community, if you have a policy that says if you're living in the community, you can vote, it eliminates all that potential
And where
problem.
Can people find out for sure, depending on where they live?
They can go to their election officials who should know about it. At the Sentencing Project, we've got the policies on our website. People need to be informed, and the election officials do as well.
And Susan Burton, where in California, since that's where you are, where can people go to find out whether they're eligible or not?
It should be on the voter registers website. And I'd like to also invite people to visit A New Way of Life's website. That website is anewwayoflife.org.
We can post that on our site. You don't have to give it all out. If somebody's driving, we don't want them to pull off the road. All of that information on our website. Susan Burton is the founder and director of A New Way of Life. That's a community-based organization that works with formerly incarcerated women in South Central Los Angeles. She was with us from NPR West. Mark Maurer is executive director of the Sentencing Project, and he joined us here in our Washington, D.C. studio. I thank you both so much for speaking to us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks for having us.